I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a daily look at how North Carolina is dealing with COVID-19 and what we're learning about ourselves in the face of a global crisis. Today, racial disparities. 21% of the people who live in North Carolina are African American, but Black people make up 39% of COVID-19 cases in the state and 37% of the deaths. Dr. Mandy Cohen is the Secretary of Health and Human Services. In her near-daily addresses, she's mentioned this racial disparity before, but this week she made a point to highlight it.
I want to assure you that these disturbing trends have not gone unnoticed by me or by my team, and they must be addressed.
But as Dr. Cohen also said, these disparities did not begin with this pandemic. The racial differences in healthcare are well documented by all manner of researchers, including those in the very department that she leads.
What this pandemic has done is shine a bright light on the long-standing structural biases and inequities that impact our health outcomes.
So let's start there with Benjamin Money. He's North Carolina's Deputy Secretary for Health Services, and he spoke with producer Will Michaels about how COVID-19 has put a new focus on the long-standing problem of racial health disparities.
When you think about the largest minority group in North Carolina, African Americans, we obviously have disparities in terms of life expectancy. And it even varies by zip code. You can go into areas that are fairly close, and with a different zip code, with a different demographic grouping, you can see some significant disparities just in overall life expectancy. And we see that across the state. And it really starts in birth. So there's a disparity in terms of maternal mortality. We also see it as it pertains to chronic disease, so diabetes, hypertension. And then we also see disparities as it pertains to mental health. And a lot of it really is very much rooted in historic issues, particularly here we are in the South. It's a legacy of Jim Crow, legacy of slavery, and many of those features of those conditions have carried on generation after generation. And I'm probably jumping ahead, but you know, when you think about COVID and its infection rates, I mean, people get infected at the same rate normally, but we're finding that people that work in the service industry, people that have more opportunity to have contact with people on an individual basis, have a greater chance of contracting the disease.
Well, I don't mind you jumping ahead at all. Let's pull that thread out a little bit more if we can, because your colleague Cornell Wright, who's the executive director of the Office of Minority Health and Health Disparities, told the healthcare working group at the legislature last week, you know, he was talking about some of the social determinants of healthcare. His words were, being Black is not the risk factor, but how we treat people because of their skin color is the risk factor. And he pointed to racism and unshared power. I guess my question is, how do the social structures that we have in place have an impact on healthcare disparities?
Yeah, so when we think about the disparities of income, and how do disparities of income happen? They happen as a result of access to education, access to employment, access to opportunities. You know, it's not by chance that people who work in the service industry have lacked opportunity, okay? In many instances, they are living in generational poverty. So there are systems in place that are within this country historically, redlining, other forms of discrimination.
That was, of course, the Federal Housing Administration.
Yeah.
Mostly blocking out the ability for people of color, African Americans, to get home loans that they would need to build wealth.
And those programs, to some extent, still exist. There's been studies that have shown that people who go for loans, that even with the same employment and credit history, African Americans and people of color will pay a higher interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also hidden redlining that occurs where, you know, while it's disallowed by federal law, people of color get steered to certain neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. If you fail to have opportunities to utilize probably the greatest investment that most Americans have, their home, to build wealth and then be able to pass that wealth along generationally, then your next generation is even further behind. So, you know, very concerned about the recovery that, you know, is taking or will take place after COVID. Will it be a disproportionate recovery? Will people who were living on the margins, will they be further behind than they were even after 2008?
You were talking about zip codes just a minute ago, and I kind of wanted to talk about location as well. Of course, there are some differences in urban versus rural when it comes to the infection rate, and that's probably due to some pretty clear factors like population density. But for someone who might be economically disadvantaged in an urban area and someone who might be economically disadvantaged in a rural area, particularly people of color, are there particular disparities there, and kind of how would you say they're being magnified during the pandemic?
So I think that the testing numbers are really interesting because testing measures folks that have been tested.
Right.
So if you have areas in which not much testing is going on, it can actually reflect inaccurately. It can actually be perceived as if there is no transmission of the virus taking place within the community, when actually it could be. So I think that that can, in some instances, create a false sense of security among folks living in those communities. So folks in rural areas sometimes can be hidden away. And also within some of the rural areas, you have, in some instances, a stigma about utilizing social services or human services. That can also be true in urban areas as well. And I think people have avoided getting healthcare because they have wanted to avoid the financial implication of what a diagnosis could mean for them. And in those circumstances, people end up putting off care. The promise or the likelihood of wanting to find out if you have a condition that is going to put you further in a hole, that is going to make you seek the healthcare system when perhaps you even have bills in the healthcare system that have gone unpaid, it really becomes somewhat of a disincentive.
Well, it strikes me, you know, and I suppose it remains to be seen because we've got some time left in this pandemic, but it strikes me that, you know, this is highlighting some vulnerabilities or weaknesses in the systems that exist.
Absolutely. You know, before this pandemic, folks didn't pay much attention to the people that checked them out at the grocery store or cleaned up in the office where they were working or collected recycling. Now we call them essential workers because they are essential. They've always been essential. But we've never given them the credit, nor have we compensated them fairly. And now we have situations in which people don't make a living wage, don't have access to health insurance, don't have access to sick time, but yet we're essentially lauding them and saying, thank you for being a hero by, you know, going to your job every day, seeing more and more different people come across your path, and essentially risking your life, the life of your family, and your well-being to provide this essential service.
Benjamin Money is North Carolina's Deputy Secretary for Health Services. He spoke with our producer, Will Michaels. There's more on racial disparities in our health system and how they're playing out during the COVID crisis in North Carolina on the State of Things podcast today, also from WUNC. Hang tight. More in a moment.
Tested is a production of WUNC North Carolina Public Radio. And this is a good time to say thanks to everyone who supports WUNC. Whether you are an individual donor or a business, we cannot say thank you enough for providing us with the resources and opportunity to serve the state of North Carolina with up-to-the-minute news and information. Everyone at WUNC is working around the clock at this unique and perilous moment in our history, and we really couldn't manage without your help. So thank you. And if you're able, please head to WUNC.org if you want to donate for the first time or to perhaps increase your support.
Yesterday, several hundred people marched in downtown Raleigh as part of a Reopen NC protest.
God bless America! No restrictions!
Whatever you think about their actions, it's highly likely that their lives are as challenging and confusing as everyone else's. But the decision they made to gather close together mostly without masks, and what they advocate for, is exactly what experts say will cause a worse and longer pandemic. At almost the exact same time that the protesters began walking and chanting down Jones Street, Dr. Michael Gunn, professor of medicine at Duke University, was saying this on a Zoom call with reporters.
You know, the people that are advocating that we eliminate social distancing right now and that we just completely open up the economy, I mean, what they're really advocating for is that every single person in this country become infected with coronavirus. Because that's what's going to happen if we throw things wide open. You know, so if you like your grandmother, you may not want to do that.
That's a pretty clear statement in confusing times. Before we go, yesterday at this same point in our podcast, we heard from Christina Pellick. She's the owner of the Fuss and Bother Salon in Durham. She explained how difficult the financial situation is right now for a small business owner who's also trying to adhere to public health guidelines and keep her customers and herself safe. These are complicated times and issues, and in trying to present her situation, we use the word easy to describe her decision to stay closed. Nothing right now is easy for anyone, and we regret indicating that her choices or her business's financial future is anything but complicated and hard. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Will Michaels is our producer. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.